So how many of you guys are fired up now? You guys ready to go? I watched that and I'm like, man, that is not how I've been doing my New Year's resolutions at all. You know, you watch videos like that and they should motivate you and they fire you up and things like that. And especially something like that that we see should get your blood pumping, you know, a little bit. But when I look at my resolutions that I've done over the years past, and you know, January 1st or even, you know, December 31st, that's my mindset, right? And that's usually our mindset. And then comes the next week and we're like, oh my gosh, this is not what I've been doing at all with my life. And so that's kind of what we're going to talk a little bit about today. I want to welcome you guys to the Crossings Church. My name's Jake. I'm not usually the guy up here. I work with our campus ministry and student ministries here at the church. But you have me today. So I'm excited that you guys are here, and we're excited that you guys came to visit with us today. Just a couple announcements real quick before we jump in is we have our church banquet tonight, our beginning of the year banquet. It's funny, we call it the end of the year banquet, but we do it at the beginning of the year. Because we kind of highlight a lot of things that we've happened in the past, but we also look towards the future, what we're going to be doing as well. And if you're visiting with us and you kind of want to see what the membership of this church is all about, and what we're committing to as a membership for the future of the next year, you know, come visit with us tonight. We'd love to have you. And there's some more information in your bulletin about that as well. And then in 2 weeks, we are leaving for our family vacation, which is one of the highlights of our student ministries. And just a few years ago, we opened it up to our high school ministry as well. And this is a retreat where we get to go to Florida. And we actually haven't been in a few years because of a hurricane and just some traveling issues and things like that. But we're finally getting to go back to Florida. And so what happens at this family vacation is we go down there as a college ministry with multiple other college ministries around the nation. And it's really cool for us to get together. And we call it family vacation because it's a bunch of disciples getting together and just learning about what God has done, not just in our own college campuses, but what he's doing around the nation. And like I said, a few years ago, we opened that up to the high school as well. And it's kind of cool to see other high schoolers, meaning other high school students from around the nation as well, learning that they're going back into their high schools and doing the same kind of things. And so if you have a high schooler or a college student, or you are a high schooler or college student, you're interested in that, you know, talk to me, talk to somebody who brought you, and we'll make sure that you guys can connect to that because we're real excited about that coming up in a few weeks. That same Sunday as well, though, it's, like I said, this is all in the back of your bulletin. We will not be meeting here as a church. We have a connection Sunday that week, and we will definitely get you guys some more information as that gets closer as well. So let's jump into this whole idea of fresh start. So how many of you guys actually made a resolution this year? Like you guys... Did anybody write it down or anything? Or how many resolutions? Just shout some out. What are just typical resolutions that maybe you've committed to or that you hear about all the time? Y'all, new year, new me. Working out, right? Maybe getting a better job, getting a different job, getting a job in general, right? Getting all these different things set up, losing weight, going to the gym more, eating healthier. You look at all these different resolutions that people keep or they start, and they may have the right mindset on what they want to do with it, but for some reason, we don't finish well, right? And we can watch a video like that and get really pumped up and get really fired up about everything that we want to do, but for some reason, as the year goes on, we look back in December and we say, man, this was not like that motivational video at the beginning of the year. Like this year I crushed it and I knocked this thing out of the park. And more times than not, I look at my life and the same kind of things can happen with my own resolutions. But even in my relationship with God, some of the same things can happen is that, you know, at times we can start this relationship with God. And we can say that there's all these new things that we want to put into our life. There's these new people. There's these new sacrifices. There's these new commitments that we want to put into our relationship with God. And we can get really fired up about it. And then when we look at the end of the year, we haven't progressed at all. In some areas, we might actually regress. And we might actually look back and say, man, I actually fell off a little bit this year from what I committed to. And what's cool about the idea of a New Year's resolution and being able to start strong is that, you know, as long as you're alive, there's always a new opportunity, right? There's always a new year. And for some of us, we look at the end of the year every single year and we're like, I cannot wait for this New Year's start. How many of you guys would like that this year? Like, you could not wait for 2020 to start to get out of last year, right? And there's drama, there's baggage, there's just hardships and things like that. And we can always look at our lives and say, man, there's always a new opportunity. And you know, you look in athletics and you look at, you know, sprinters, and it's so disheartening to watch somebody who has a great start. You know, I watch a lot of track and field whenever the Summer Olympics come around, and I love watching when sprinters come out of the blocks and it looks like they're about to beat a world record. They start so strong, but for some reason something happens and they don't get the finish, and they don't finish well. And the same thing, like I said, can happen in our lives, is that we can start really strong, but for some reason times can happen and things can be put into our lives that hinder us from finishing well. And so, you know, this lesson today is not just talking about how we can finish well in our relationship with God and in life, but also getting off on the right foot and learning how to start. I find the story in the Bible that really does help out with the situation that we can learn about, and it's the story of what Nehemiah does in the city in Jerusalem. Because at this time, the Babylonians, you know, they had destroyed this city. And this is years and years later that some of God's people decided to want to go back in the city and rebuild. They want to go back in and rebuild. And there's some hindrances and there's some things that they want to go in and start to finish. And Nehemiah's story kicks in because he wants to actually go back in and rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. And the crazy thing is that it starts out well, but just like things happen in our lives, we get motivated, we get pumped up, and we get sent on these things and we want to do these things. But more times than not, something intervenes and it slows us down. And so it's kind of funny because we're gonna start with the finishing products and then end on the starting products of how we can start this year off right. But when you look at your life and when you look at the story of Nehemiah, these are some things that I find that keep us from finishing strong. And right off the bat, we struggle to finish strong because of fatigue. You know, we struggle to finish strong because of fatigue. It says in Nehemiah 4:10, it says, they said, the strength of the laborers is giving out. Right? And we can all relate to this. You know, if you've ever worked out, if you ever played a sport, if you ever went to work, you know, if you've ever done anything of physical endurance at all, you start to learn that you can't do it at that same pace all day, every day, whatever it is that you do in your life. And fatigue kicks in, and it slows you down, and that discouragement can slow you down as well, just like these men did when they were working on this wall. They said the strength of the laborers is giving out. It doesn't mean that they never started it. It just means that they started it and they didn't have the endurance to finish it. And we can relate to that as well, that there's this fatigue that shows up in our lives that maybe we thought we had the great start that we wanted, but we start to slow down because of the effort and because of the endurance that we don't have, right? We also can struggle to finish strong because of frustration, right? We can struggle to finish strong because of frustration. And it says in Nehemiah 4:10, it says, and it's kind of crazy because these first few verses, it's all the same verse, but we just pick apart little things. And, you know, first off, it starts, you know, they said the strength of laborers is giving out, and then they go right on and say, and there's so much trash and rubble to be removed. And so they just get into the situation, and they start to look around, and they immediately see so much stuff all over the place, right? I have a three-year-old daughter, and from time to time, we try to get her to clean her room, you know? And more times than not, I end up cleaning the room. And I'm trying to teach her these things, and it's hard for me to want to, like, because I can get it knocked out in, like, 15, 20 minutes, right? I can just get all toys, throw them in. But we've got to teach responsibility, you know? And whenever we have Peyton go into her room, we're like, you need to go clean your room. We're like, tomorrow, we're cleaning your room. She gives you, like, this instant face, and she's just like, and she just starts bawling her eyes out. And she's like, oh, I don't want to clean my room, right? And she's like, it's just, I don't. And she, but because she realizes that it's a mess, right? She's got accessories of all these baby dolls all over the place. And she's just, it's a mess. And she realizes that whenever she sits in her room, that it's going to take all day for her to get this done. And so this frustration kicks in her. And she starts to pout and she starts to throw a fit, because she knows that it's going to take her forever to clean up this mess, right? And maybe some of you guys don't sit around and you look at the things that you guys have going on in your lives and you just start crying because you're like, it's just a mess and I'm never going to get to clean it up. Some of you guys probably do, though, right? And you look at your life and you're like, this is just, I don't know where to start. And this frustration for these people, these Israelites, was the same kind of way. They look at this mess around them, they see so much stuff, and a frustration starts to kick in their life. And maybe the same thing can happen with us. And we look at our lives and the things that we have in our lives right now, and we just look and we're just frustrated because we don't know where to start. We know that there's a mess in our lives, but we just don't know at what point to jump in. We can also struggle not because of fatigue and because of frustration, but we can also struggle to finish strong because of frailty. Right? We can struggle because of frailty, that we're just not capable, or that we don't think we're capable enough to do this. It says in that same verse that we ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. So there's all kinds of complaints, right? And it's just this one verse. You know, starting off back of there, it says, the strength of labor is giving out, and there's so much trash and rubble, and we are unable to rebuild the wall, right? And so just in that one verse, they have so much, there's so much content about just the frustrations of finishing well and what's going on in their lives, and this idea that they're incapable, and they're just saying, we can't do this, right? And I know more times than not, in my life, the word can't and won't sometimes fit into the same word, right? They kind of mean the same thing to me at times, right? And we got to teach our little kids that same kind of stuff, right? When we start to parent, we're like, is it because you can't or because you won't, right? And because as a parent, you know what your kids are capable of. You know if they can or can't do something. You know if they can clean the room. They're like, I can't. You're like, you're telling me that you physically cannot go pick up 5 or 6 toys and throw them in your toy box. Or you cannot pick up that trash bag because it's so heavy and you cannot take it out there. But you can go play outside for 6 hours. You can play on the video games all day. You look at these certain things and you start to realize what you're truly capable of and what you're not. And those things sound silly as a parenting perspective, but then we look at our lives as well and we say, I can't get a good job. I can't ever have a good marriage. I can't raise my kids the way I want to. And just like these people that Nehemiah had around this wall, they're saying, I can't build this wall. We can't do these kind of things. And this capability issue, this frailty issue, sometimes is more of a mental mindset than a physical mindset, right? That we really do feel like we physically can't do it, but at the end of the day, it starts to turn into a mental issue. And as you guys will realize, that frailty that I'm talking about, this, if you know anything about the story, this wall does get finished. And so this mindset it doesn't make sense, because the wall does get finished by those same people who are making those claims. And so we look at fatigue, we look at frustration. We can't finish strong because of frailty, but also we struggle to finish strong because of fear. We struggle to finish strong because of fear. In the next verse, Nehemiah 4:11, and it says all this stuff first, and then it goes on. It says, and at all this time, our enemies are saying, they won't know what hit them. Before they know it, we'll be at their throats, killing them right and left. That'll put a stop to their work. So on top of all this frustration they have around this wall, right, this huge giant wall that's been torn down and they're starting to rebuild it, on top of the fear, or on top of the fatigue and the frustration and the frailty, now they had a fear because they actually have enemies while they're trying to build this wall that are going to be like, yeah, we'll knock them out one by one. You know, they'll work all day on this wall and they'll get, you know, it's kind of like going to the gym working out. You can go work out and then afterwards, like, you're kind of like sore and you're kind of tired and stuff. Well, these people were saying, well, listen, you know, they're gonna tire themselves out, and that's when we're gonna strike. That's when we're gonna get them, you know. And so they also had this fear that they're like, they're working on this wall, and there's people literally behind their backs wanting to come in and kill them. And we look at this idea that there's this fear in our lives, and the same kind of fear can set in our hearts too, that let us think that, you know, we are not good enough. Or have you guys ever thought that before? That you're not good enough? Or you don't have what it takes, or somebody ever told you that before, and then you start to buy into that lie, and then you start to live in fear because you don't think you have what it takes, or you don't think that you're good enough, and these insecurities start to seep into your heart and into your life, and this fear starts to overtake us. You know, I feel like I'm a beating drum up here sometimes whenever I talk about this, but that same fear whenever I talk about fatherhood for me has always been a huge issue, because I never was, you know, I never had a good model of a dad. And so this insecurity would always sink in me to say, you're never going to be a good dad. You're never going to be able to achieve these things. And I instantly bought into that lie, and I'm like, you're right. Like, I'm not going to be this. I'm just going to be a product of my environment. I'm going to be exactly what I was shown whenever I was a kid. And this fear starts to seep in, and it becomes an insecurity in my life. And you may have one of those things, and you may relate to one of those things, but this last point, it kind of stems from all the first ones, is because those things seep in because there's somebody who is against us. Because the number five is we struggle to finish strong because Satan wants us to fail. And the problem with all those things before it is because Satan wants to come in and tell you whatever it is that you need to believe to make sure that you do fail. That you aren't strong enough and you're going to get fatigued. That this is too much for you to handle and you're going to get frustrated. That you aren't capable enough because you've never had the training or the experience, so you're going to be frail. That you really aren't going to be able to do any of these things and your life is going to be lived in constant fear. And we struggle to finish strong because there is somebody who wants you to fail. And he does it in a lot of different ways. And Satan first will find people to ridicule us. He's going to find people to come into your life and ridicule you. You know, these people, it says in Nehemiah 4:1, it says, when Sanballat heard that they were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed, and he ridiculed the Jews. And so, you know, I've seen this more times than not, especially in our campus ministry, because what happens, unfortunately, I feel like when it comes to, when Satan chooses to find people to ridicule you, he usually finds people that are close to you, right? He finds some of your closest friends or family members that will come in. I see this so much in the campus ministry because if you know anything about our church, we're very unchurched, which means that we don't have like long lines of family histories in the Crossings Church. We don't have like my dad went and his dad went and they were all preachers and they went to seminary. And we don't have that kind of structure in our church. We're more of a restoration church, which means that we've found a lot of people in the world who have been hurting and broken, and they're breaking cycles, and this is the first generation of what that's going to look like. But unfortunately, whenever you choose to find those kind of people in the world, you're dealing with those kind of people's families. They're the same exact way that they are, or that they were, and they don't want to buy into this rebuilding kind of thing, or they don't want to fall into this cycle-breaking thing because they're totally fine with where they're at in the world. And so when Satan usually tries to find people to ridicule us, like I said in the campus ministry, I've seen this so many times, is somebody, you know, somebody wants to do something different with their life. It's not necessarily better, it's just different. And they try to show that to their family members and say, listen, I'm not better than you. I just want to do something different with my life. I want to try something new. I want to try to get something better. And the insecurities start to seep in, and they start to come into the families. And they're like, listen, you're trying to say that you're better than me because you're changing your life and you don't like the way I'm doing mine, you know? And they're like, listen, we're not going to control one another, but I don't want to be like that. I don't want to grow up to look like this. I want my family to not have to worry about divorce. I don't want my family to have to worry about going from paycheck to paycheck. I want to be responsible and get a career. Like, I want to start something new. I don't want my sons and daughters to disrespect me. I don't want my family to be broken like this one day, you know? And maybe they don't say that straight up to their face, but the way that they choose to live their life shouts that, right? Because when you find a relationship with God, it shows what family can look like. It shows what fellowship and support can look like. But what Satan does is he comes in and he finds the people who are closest to you and says, listen, you need to go in and just start tearing that person down because they think that they're better than you. And they're trying to live better than you. And the only way that they're going to get back on the same page with you is if you can go in there far enough to break them down. And I've seen it in my life, and I've seen it in many, many college students' lives. And this is one of Satan's biggest tricks, is that he uses the people closest to you to try to ridicule you. And not only that, but he'll find people to rally against you. At times, it may not just be one person. It may not just be a mom or a dad, or a brother or a sister, or a best friend from high school, or a coworker, or whatever it is. But it may be a group. You know, it says in Nehemiah 4:7-8, it says, when they heard that the work was going ahead and that the gaps in the wall were being repaired, they were furious. They all made plans to come and fight against Jerusalem and throw us into confusion. And so Satan will start to gather people to fight against you. And it's crazy because, you know, how many of you guys have ever lived life being like, I don't want to make any enemies, right? That you're like, I want to, it's not necessarily being a people pleaser, but you just, you don't, you don't want to like tread water, you know, like you don't want to rock the boat at all. Like you want to make sure that everybody that you meet, like you guys are on good terms with, like you don't like the conflict or the drama. Is anybody else like that? Like you really don't, you don't like conflict. And so if you can live your life in a way that's not going to let other people have conflict with you, you're doing just fine. Well, if you want to have a relationship with God, that's never going to happen. You know, because you can do everything right. You can live the best life possible. You can live the most God-honoring life as you can. And you're going to cause, you're going to create enemies. And that's hard for people that live, that have that mindset, right? Because I'm one of those people too. I'm like, I just, you know, in high school, like I was the jock. Like I was the guy who played all the sports. I sat at that table or whatever it was. But I also didn't make enemies. Like, the rest of the jocks, I guess, in a sense. You know, I didn't bully other people. Like, I didn't make fun of other people. Like, I didn't choose to, like, not associate with other people. Like, I had my group, you know, but I also made sure that I didn't disrespect or do anything wrong to any other group, in a sense, you know. But even in that sense, like, there were still people who looked at me because of the life I was living, and they didn't want anything to do with me, and they would rally against me, and they would say hard things to me. And it's no different in a relationship with God. That you may live the best life possible, that you may be the most responsible person at your job, you may be, you know, the most financially stable in your family, you may have the most supportive family and the most structurally sound family in the world, but that doesn't mean that people aren't going to treat you differently because of that, because they don't have those things. And that's exactly what's going on with these people, is that Satan has found people to rally against them because of how well they're doing and because of what they want to do and rebuild this wall. And so when Satan can find people to rally against us, it's not necessarily because we're doing something wrong. It may be because we're doing something right. And if you want to live a life that's not going to tread water or rock the boat, then a life with God is not what you want. And it's not that you are like, yeah, I want to be a Christian because I want to rock the boat. You know, like nobody says that either, right? They're like, I want to start conflict, so sign me up, God. Like, I want to start fighting today. Like, no, nobody says that either, right? But you're going to find that in a relationship with God. You're going to find people that are against you. And they're going to rally against you. And they're going to ridicule you. And they're also going to start rumors about you. You know, Satan will find people will start rumors about us. It says in Nehemiah 6:5-6, it says, Sanballat's servant came and said, there's a rumor amongst the surrounding nations, and Geshem tells me it's true that you and the Jews are planning to rebel, and that is why you're building the wall. According to his reports, you plan to be their king. So Sanballat comes in and talks to the people, and he's like, listen, I know what's going on here. I've been hearing that Nehemiah is building these walls up because he's going to try to become king. You know? And so Satan can feed people lies and start spreading things that aren't necessarily true to cause frustrations, to cause divisions, to cause these different things in our lives that are completely not true. You know, high school, you all hear about that gossip, right? Is that still like a thing? Yeah, right? It's always a thing. Like, it's always going to be something that goes on. You're going to hear things at school, like, so-and-so said this about me, or so-and-so said that you don't like them anymore, and now they want to break up with you, and then there's all this fighting and stuff like that, right? And some of you guys are laughing because, you know, it's probably your situation right now, isn't it? But we hear these rumors, and we start gossiping, these insecurities, and like I said, this all stems from Satan. Satan feeds fear to people's lives. He feeds insecurities, and he starts to create things that aren't real. He starts to put your head in a place that isn't real. It's not logical, and it's not reality. And he makes you feed and bite into these lies and these insecurities in your life, saying, listen, you aren't good enough, or they're not good enough, and this is why, and I'm going to make sure that your mind isn't thinking straight, and you're going to start saying things that don't make any sense because it's exactly what you need to do to feel better about yourself. So go out and start spreading this stuff about the people around you. Go out and start acting this way or treating people this way, and you're going to feel a lot better about yourself. And more times than not, what I've seen is when people grow up and they were those kind of people that spread those kind of rumors or they had that kind of gossip, they grow older and they feel like trash. You know, you watch all these stories or all these videos about like bullies, right, when they get older and they have like this revelation and they like want to go back, right? And find those kids or find those friends that they had or those bullies that they had or those kids that they had bullied and apologize. Because a guilt starts to sink in once reality finally hits and they realize that the way that they chose to act and treat people was not a way to help somebody finish well. But yet Satan knows that this is the exact same way to start somebody's life out, is to make them feel like they're never going to finish well. And so when you look at these different things, these different, I guess, F's that we have listed, we should all be able to relate to at least one. When we look at our lives and we look at the starts, like I said, you know what start you want to have differently. You know if it's a family situation, you know if it's a marriage, if it's a financial situation, a job, your relationships, whatever it is, just being more, you know, responsible or dependable with your life. I don't know what it is for you, but I know that we always have things in our lives we look at, and we look at the beginning of the year, and we're like, what's going to be different this year? And we can all look at this list, and we can all find something on this list, and we're like, this is why. This is what's been holding me back. And I think you got to ask yourself that question, what is keeping you from finishing strong? And only when you answer that question, you can start to look at, what can I start doing to start well? What can I do in my life? What is something with this new year to give myself a new start? What are some things that I can starting responses that will result in a strong finish? Because you've got to identify what's holding you back. But that's just not enough to just identify it. You've got to figure out what to put in your life now to fix it. And I think a lot of times we have the right mindset where it's, you know, what's the starting response to getting healthier? Well, obviously it's buying a gym membership, right? That's why Club Fitness does that like $9.99 deal at the beginning of the year. That's the thing. You just have to throw them 10 bucks and then you guys, that's your New Year's resolution, right? That I signed up for a gym membership. Well, that may be like a great like percentage of the starting point, but you know that you're like, you buy that and you're like, that's not it, right? Because lots of us have gym memberships, right? But lots of us don't go to the gym. And so we can't realize that that is the resolution itself. And so sometimes maybe we think we have the start that we want to have, but it's really not the mindset that we need to have. And so these are responses that we're going to kind of address that result in a strong finish. And the same thing like Nehemiah's people is, it wasn't just being there. It wasn't just getting the materials to build the wall. There had to be an action, a response, and more times than not, it comes from the heart. It had to come from the heart to result in the strong finish. And so here's some things that we need to start doing, all right? The first one is we need to start calling out to God. We must start calling out to God. It says in Nehemiah 4:4, it says, Nehemiah prayed, O God, hear us. We are despised. Turn their insults back on them and let them be robbed in the land where they are prisoners. And so, you know, Nehemiah understood that he wasn't capable of doing this on his own. He had to look to God and he had to ask God for help. It says again in verse 14, a little further down, it says, after I looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. And so we've got to start calling out to God. And, you know, I think this is one of those things that as a church, as a Crossings church as a whole, I think that this is one of those things that we really haven't tapped into the way that we should have until this year. Especially in our campus ministry, because there was something going on. We've been to some conferences over the last year or so, and we started to realize that there are some people around the country that are tapping into calling on God a lot more than we have been. That we've kind of been relying on our own power, our own strength, our own wisdom, and our own structure a lot more than we should have been. And this year, this past year, we put in a lot of practice, this idea of prayer and fasting and how it can really be put and implemented into our lives in a way that we can stop trying to control everything that our church is doing and really rely on God. And it's been so cool and transformational to see, maybe not necessarily numbers, but to see hearts and lives changed from the members that are here because they've chosen to stop controlling their lives and give things back to God. To start fasting for a day instead of saying, you know, listen, I'm going to try to figure out how to do A, B, and C. To just, you know, I'm going to drop this today. I'm going to fast about it. I'm going to pray about it. I'm going to rally with other people around this. And we're going to just go to God with this and see what, and that clarity that has been brought because of remembering the Lord like Nehemiah has done has been tremendous and so powerful for our church. And so just because you attend church or just because you become a part of a church doesn't necessarily mean that you do everything the way that God wants you to 24/7, you know? And I'm sure there's going to be things that we find this year as well that we're going to look at, and we're probably going to be like, man, we probably should have done that a little differently or a little bit better. You know, or maybe there's some areas that we're going to improve in this year as well. I don't really know, but I know that when you go to church, it doesn't mean that you're perfect. And it doesn't mean that you've arrived. There's no perfect church here on earth, you know? And so when I look at our church, we obviously address those things. And that's one of those things that we're going to talk about tonight as well at this banquet that we do, is looking back at some of the high points of our year and looking forward to some things that we're really going to improve and work on as a membership in a congregation, as a family of Christ. But like I said, we've got to start calling out to God and learning a way like Nehemiah did with his people to help them realize that they're not going to get this wall finished just on their own physical power. That God's going to have to intervene and God's going to have to be a part of this process. So we need to start calling out to God, but we need to also start connecting with others. Start connecting with others. And for there's a couple reasons we need to start connecting with others, right? The first one is that others can provide physical support. So we need to start connecting with others, just like Nehemiah needed with his people. We need to start connecting with others because others can provide physical support. It says in Nehemiah 4:9, it says, "But we prayed to our God and posted a guard day and night to meet this threat." And so they would physically put somebody in a position to guard so they could continue to work. Because, like I said, there were enemies at their backside, and there was this fear constantly put into their hearts and things like that. So what they decided to do is, all right, we're going to put somebody on guard so you guys can focus on the work. There will be a physical person between you and the enemy so that you can finish what you're doing. And if you know anything about sports and you know anything about athletics, the same kind of things need to happen if we're going to get that support. We need support. You know, I look back in my life, I was a big baseball guy. You know, I played baseball all through high school. I played on a club team in college, and that was kind of like my life. You know, like I said, I grew up without a dad, so baseball was like the thing for me, and that's where I kind of went to. And so I invested my life, you know, from, you know, I don't know, little like T-ball, Little League, whatever, until high school, until I graduated. And then I just kind of did it recreationally in college. But I look at what I did in baseball, and I know that I would not have the skills that I have today in the sport if it wasn't for other people. And that's one of the things, as an athlete, the most arrogant thing you can say is that you can do it yourself. And you look at some of these stars and these all-stars and these guys that play basketball or baseball or whatever they are, and, you know, the real arrogant, cocky ones, like, nobody wants to play on their teams. You see it all over the NBA, right? If you guys ever watch, you know, the news stories and things like that. These really arrogant guys, people will leave teams because they don't want to play with certain people. Because these guys think they got it down. They think that they know all they need to know about the game. But what their teammates realize that they don't is that there's five guys on the court at a time for their team. And it's not just going to be up to one guy to finish the game. But as a kid, those skills and those things that I learned and I acquired, it wasn't as soon as I started to learn those skills, I went off on my own and did my own thing. But I remember as I grew up playing, you know, as I grew up playing baseball, you start off with a tee, right? As a little tiny kid, you get that little batting tee, don't you, right? And you start hitting off that thing. And that will only take you so far, won't it? Because at a certain point, they get you ready for coach pitch, don't they? And so or machine pitch. I think machine pitch is first, right? And so they get that little machine out there. How many of you guys have kids that have played in some sort of baseball or softball, right? And so you get that little tee in the backyard, and like, and it's awesome because, like, as a parent, you're like, all right, I don't have to do anything. Like, they can hit that off the tee, and you pick it up and put it back on. You pick it. You know, like, you can make them do everything to acquire that skill at first. Well, then you have to get involved, right? And if it's machine pitch, you've got to stand behind the machine, and you've got to drop it in the bucket, right? You got to drop it in the little wheel and let it kind of kick out every single time. But, like, you can still, like, make them go pick up all the balls, right? And they can bring it back to you. So you're still stationary, but now at least you're dropping, right? And then at some point, that can only take you so far because they need to see it coming out of the hand. They need to see it visually being released. They need to start seeing release points. And so now you got to do a little bit of arm movement, don't you? Right? You got to start releasing it a little bit more. And maybe it's underhand at first or whatever, but then their bat swing starts getting better. And now you got to start sweating a little bit, right? Because now you got to start throwing it. And that's whenever you hire a coach to come in and do the rest, right? That's whenever you get to that point where it's like, all right, you've gotten to the point where like I'm going to step out and I'm going to give somebody more experience the time to get with you. And I look at that and I remember when I played in high school baseball, I played at Bethalto. And if you know anything about Bethalto, especially when I was there, baseball was the sport. Like, they didn't care about anything else in Bethalto but baseball. You can look at their football record, that proves it. Like, they were terrible in every other sport, but baseball was the thing. We would finish, you know, in our top in our conference every single year. Like, my senior year, we set the high school record for the most wins in the season, and we were a game away from state, and that's what it was like there. And for the coaching positions there, it's like, if you guys don't make it to conferences, you know, the championships, you're not going to have a job next year. And so what we would do is very strenuous stuff in our practices. Like, we would get in the batting cage, you know, all day, and we would be videotaped, and then they would pull us out and we'd watch video. And these are some things that, like, a lot of other high schools didn't do this kind of stuff. This is like MLB stuff that they would do, or minor league stuff that they would do. And I remember going back and looking at that time and time and time again, and how much time these coaches would be in the cage with me, and they would just be throwing the ball time and time again. And I don't realize until I am where I am today that I got a PE degree, and I actually coached baseball for a while, and I didn't realize how much work was put in to working with these students, to working with these young athletes. And more times than not, once I found out, once I was where I was at, that a lot of those coaches were volunteers. They weren't even paid to do what they were doing with us. And it blows my mind how much time and energy and effort was put into me as just an arrogant little high school boy by volunteers that had wives and had families and had jobs to invest in me, to just give me some kind of development that may progress me in life in this area. You know, and this idea of physical support is that God wants you to understand that if you're going to have a relationship with Him, you will not be able to do this alone. And showing up to church is great, but it's not the end game. That you need physical support day in and day out. You need somebody throwing that ball at you in the cage all day, every day. And whatever capacity that is in your life, you need to find the people in your life that are going to give you that support to make you more successful down the road. And so, not only will others provide that physical support, but the second reason is because they can provide that emotional support. They can provide emotional support. It says in Nehemiah 4:14, it says, "I looked them over and proceeded to tell the nobles, the leaders, and the rest of the people, 'Do not be afraid of our enemies. Remember how great and awe-inspiring the Lord is.'" And so Nehemiah goes in and he tells the people, says, don't be afraid. And he gives them that encouragement that they need. He gives them that support that they need. And sometimes we don't necessarily just need a physical person to help us with these skills and abilities, but we need that physical person there because of the emotional support they can provide for us. That's what church is for. That's what the body of Christ is for, is to provide the people that can give you that support in your life, physically and emotionally, that's going to help us go on. You know, how many times have you been through something that's hard in your life and nobody's there for you? Right? You have the hardest things, the biggest struggles, the deepest hurts that you've had to experience in this world. And for some of us, we've had to deal with that in our bed by ourselves. Right? We've had to cry ourselves to sleep thinking about what's just happened to us, or the trauma, or the death, or the miscarriage, or the divorce, or the fill in the blank. And we've had to deal with some of the hardest things in our lives alone. But for others, we've never had to have that feeling, right? That we've known that there's always been a person there for us. Or maybe we've had the best of both worlds, where, you know, we've seen what it's like to feel alone in this stuff. But we've also been able to see what it feels like to have people around us and support us. And it's a daily thing. It's a daily encouragement that, you know, maybe they're not going to fix it, but sometimes you just need a cheerleader in your corner. You need somebody in your life that can provide a meal or a kind word. And like I said, that's what church is for. That's where it starts, is you should be able to come into a church building and leave feeling more emotionally supported than any other day of the week. And if you don't feel that when you walk in and out of a church building, that's not church. That's not a church you want to be a part of either. You know? If you don't feel that here, then this isn't a church. But I've seen a lot of churches that people feel that way, that it's just a checklist. It's just like one more place they got to go throughout the week. They just throw it in, they pencil it in, and they're like, they're in and out. You know, it's just a family function. They get there, they listen to service, and they got more plans throughout the day, and they go watch football, they go eat lunch, then they got more errands to run, and it's just one more thing they do on the list. That's not what church is intended to be. And it could be because of one of two reasons. It could be because, one, you found an unhealthy church, but it also may be because you're not letting the church tap in the way it's supposed to. And I think you've got to ask yourself that question. Whenever it comes to emotional support, are you the one that's blocking the emotional support? Or are you just in an unhealthy environment that doesn't provide emotional support? But either way, God makes it very clear that we need to connect with others to get the support, because it's essential. It's essential for your salvation, and it's essential for your life here on earth. Number three is also, we need to start calling out to God, start connecting with others, and then start to continue to work. That sounds like an oxymoron, right? You need to start to continue to work, right? And when I was filling out this point, I was working on this sermon with Ben Mullins. He's our preacher at the Interbelt. We were talking on the phone this week, and we're like, yeah, that just doesn't sound right. And I was like, yeah, I know. But let's just do it anyway, because it's a talking point, right? Because to start to continue to work, it does make sense if you think about it, because how many of you guys have just quit? You know, how many of us just quit at something? And it's not that these people didn't start to work, because it's easy to start. It's not easy to learn how to continue. And this is one of those things where it's just like, you just got to keep chugging, right? Just keep going, right? That they sing in Finding Nemo. I'm not going to sing, because every time I sing, the campus ministry laughs at me. It's the funny story. I guess I'll say it since I have some time. So when we baptize somebody, we sing the song, I'll Never Be the Same Again, right? And somebody has to lead it, you know? And it's usually my wife, because she's on the worship team and she sings really pretty. But she decided to walk out of the room at my house and check on our kids. And like, I was praying and I opened my eyes and she's not here. And I'm like, we got to start the song, I Will Never Be. Like, I started singing and people are like. And then she was in the room. She was just in the back corner. I guess she came back in. And so now every single time somebody gets baptized, which is so unfortunate because we are a church that saves so many people, I have to sit here and look at the campus ministry and be like, Jake, you gonna start the song today? You know? All right, Jake, let's get going. And I have to remember that for the rest of my life now. And so somebody had said that years ago, that it's God doesn't want a beautiful sound. He just wants, what is that, Wes? What is that they always say? That
joyful noise,
right? And the Lord knew I was joyful that day for somebody's life being saved, but it did not sound like that to everyone else in the room, right? And so, but I started it, right? I started it, you know, and that's what this is all about, is starting. It's not necessarily starting, but it's starting to continue it. And when we can look into our lives and we see multiple things that we've tried in life, when life gets hard, it's easy to quit. So easy to quit. Nehemiah 4:6, it says, we kept at it, repairing and rebuilding the wall. Life gets so hard. You know, I tell us to our student ministry, it doesn't matter if they're junior high, high school, or college. So wherever you're at in your life, this is the easiest it's ever going to be. This is the easiest your life is ever going to be. Because every day from here on out is going to get so much harder. You know, if you're a junior high, you're going to high school, you're going to start dealing with multiple different things in high school. You're going to start dealing with cliques. You're going to start dealing with drama. You're going to start dealing with issues. Once you get to high school, to college, you're going to start dealing with jobs. You're going to start dealing with managing and juggling different things. Once from college, young adulthood, you're going to start finding careers, you're going to start finding spouses. You know, as you get older, you're going to have kids, you're going to start learning. And so every aspect of your life is going to get harder and harder and harder. And it's going to get so easy to just want to regress back to like that generation right before. All right, I want to go back to what it was like in college. I just want to be able to just hang out in the dorm and play video. I want to go back to what it was like in high school. I don't have to worry about a job. And it's easy to just want to stop. But if we're going to continue to look at our life and want to finish well, we have got to start to learn how to continue in these areas. You know, as a church plant, this is probably one of the biggest things that has opened my eyes, is that I'm not going to lie. I think I was kind of arrogant coming on this church plant. You know, our church was planted 2 years ago, right? And so we have our church in Wentzville, Missouri, that we have been planted from. And it's a pretty big church. It's pretty developed now. It's running about, you know, 400 or 500 on a Sunday. And it's a decent sized church. And it's very structurally sound. Like, the small groups are developed. There's a high school ministry that's developed. There's a campus ministry that's developed. There's adult ministries. And so anytime that somebody would walk into the church, they could be instantly plugged into somewhere they would fit in very, very easily. And for our church plant people here at the Crossings, we were a part of that. And to go out on a church plant sometimes, I think, provides the sense of arrogance, or like this idea that we know how to do it well, so we're just going to do it well, you know? And then once we got out here, at least for me, and I know from some people I talked to, that's not what it's like, you know? Just because you've been able to do it well with a lot of people who do it well around you doesn't necessarily mean that that translates into doing it well by yourself, you know? And for a lot of us, we look at this church plant and we're like, this is freaking hard. Like, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do. The relationships that I've had to learn how to build, the time that I've had to learn to manage, the sacrifice I've had to learn to take in my life, this is some hard stuff. And we face opposition on this church plant. There's no doubt about it. But we've also faced opposition not just from the world, but we face opposition from within our own membership. And once again, there's no perfect church. And we've had to watch people within our own membership slow the process down. And they said, this is too hard, I'm going to stop. Maybe I was doing it in Winston, but I'm not doing it here. You know, I know exactly what I need to do, but I'm not going to. Because life has gotten harder. And every day I get older, there's one more thing I got to worry about. And so I remember what I was like then, but I'm not going to be like that now. And we look at this church plant, and at times, like I said, it can be hard, because it doesn't matter if you're looking at church planting, if you're looking at your job, if you're looking at relationships, your marriage, it gets hard. And it can be very easy to stop. And that's what was going on with this wall, is that it kind of came to a stopping point. And Nehemiah had to jump in there and realize that it's got to continue to go. That the only way that this is ever going to get finished is if we continue. And just like I said, with this church, we've gotten smaller at times. Our ministry sometimes have cut off, and people have left, or people have walked away, or people have just sat in the stands or in the chairs. And sometimes it can get smaller. But what's going to make it be what it needs to be is that there was also people who just continued regardless. Says, all right, if that's how you're going to act, that's how you're going to live, I love you, but I can't sit around if I know this is what I need to do. And that's the exact same thing that Nehemiah told his people. It says in Nehemiah 4:21, it says, so we continued to work. Half of us held spears from early dawn until the stars came out. Wouldn't have been so much nicer if they didn't have to hold a spear in one hand and a sword and a hammer in the other. They make illustrations of that, right? That when they're building this wall, they got a hammer in one hand working on this wall, and they got a spear in the other one just making sure they kept guard. Wouldn't it be so much nicer if there was maybe like double amount of people, that like half of them could hold spears and half of them could do their work? So much work could have got done even faster. Church planting is no different, you know? And this is, like I said, maybe a little bit of a challenge to our membership, but don't you think it'd be so much easier if everybody started picking up and doing something versus just half, you know? And we look at our lives too, and the people that we have in our lives, it's no different whether you're in church or you're doing something with your job or your marriage. Wouldn't it be so much easier if both parties in the marriage would start doing what they need to do instead of one having to carry the weight, you know? A lot of times women are usually known to be the more religious one in the marriage. Wouldn't it be nice if the men stepped up and started, you know, raising their kids in a spiritual manner, and then the kids started coming together and learning how to do those things because they saw mom and dad working twice as hard together? Wouldn't it be so much easier at your job if there was so many people complaining about certain people, if everyone at the job started doing their job, you know? Wouldn't it make the job so much more enjoyable? You know, looking at every single little thing in your life, wouldn't it be so much easier if we got paid twice as much? No, but when we look at these different things in our lives, when people start to continue to do work, it makes it easier for everyone else to want to do the work. And in a relationship with God, the work's got to get done, whether you want it to do or not. And so that means God's people are going to do the work whether you want to or not. The question is, are you going to help relieve some of that issues and some of that work? Are you going to sit around and let everybody else do twice as much? And we've got to start to continue to work. And the way that we do that is kind of on this last point, is to start concentrating on your purpose. Here's your motivation to not want to sit back anymore. This is all you need to hear, is to concentrate on your purpose. Because when you can concentrate on your purpose and your focus, that's where the motivation kicks in. Whether you think that you're a Christian or not, whether you are just attending and checking things out or not, everyone has a purpose. Everyone wants a purpose. And as soon as you start to fulfill your purpose, that's where motivation kicks in and sets in your life. And Nehemiah says this to the same people working on this wall. He says, put your minds on the master and then fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. And so Nehemiah is kind of telling these people, you need to remember who and why you're fighting. And you need to remember what you're fighting for. You need to have this purpose set in your life to make sure that you know exactly what you want with your life. And sometimes our purpose can get flawed and get fogged. And sometimes we forget why we're doing what we're doing. You know, I don't remember how many times I've heard people talk about jobs. Like that's what I said, college ministry is that ministry where you watch people get a new job every like 2 weeks, right? And you watch people jump from job to job to job. And like, this just isn't fitting me. Like, this isn't what I like. This isn't what I need. And I'm like, man, I wish you'd just stick with something. Like, figure out what you want to do. It's not necessarily your career, but man, just go somewhere. And I've watched that over and over and over again. People find new jobs, right? And it's because they don't like what they're doing or because they don't see what it is. And here's the funny thing, though, is when they jump from job to job, they make the same amount of money, you know? And I'm like, you're making $10.25 there. Now you're making $10.25 here, but instead of flipping pizzas, you're flipping burgers, you know? So what's the difference? You're still getting the green's the same, you know? And well, the stress level's so much lower here, you know? Or it's just so much more chill here, you know? Or the people are less dramatic here, you know? They let me off an hour earlier here. You know, they don't make me do as much work here. You know, whatever it may be, we find all these different excuses on why we do what we do. But when you just remember your purpose, you remember why you're working in the first place. You know, for a college kid, it's just to have money to do stuff with. But for, you know, a family man, it's a provision, right? They don't really care what they're doing because they know why they're doing. And that's the same exact thing that needs to happen to find that motivation. And those are some of the most admirable people because, you know, I've been to McDonald's, you know, quite a bit. You know, and we always hear like these complaints about like McDonald's and fast food places, right? And they're like, why are they going to get their price jumped up? Like, why do they need to make $15 an hour? They can't even get my order right, like in the drive-thru and things like that, right? And we see those high school students and those college students that jump in there because they don't care about their jobs. But I've also seen people in those jobs that work day in and day out, and maybe they haven't had the best start, maybe they've had a really bad environment or set up at home. But man, I love watching those people that are working there. They're, you know, they're 30, 40 years old, and they don't complain. They don't talk back. They respect their bosses. They work their butts off. They ask if there's anything else that the customers need. And when you talk to a lot of those people, for some of them, it's all they've known. But they know they need that paycheck. They know that there's a provision that is so more important once they leave that building than what they're going to do or what they're going to complain about while they're there. And it's humbling. It is to think about how much I complain about a job that I probably make more than somebody in a fast food place. But then I watch some people who've been working their butts off for years at places like this. I mean, like, it's so admirable to watch somebody who can focus more on their purpose than their preference in their job. And to work with a great heart because they're fighting for their families and they're fighting for their futures. And so they're not going to let a job or a relationship or a drama issue or whatever it is stand in their way. And the same thing can be for a relationship with God. Like I talked about, God has work set in store for us. It says in Acts 20:24, it says, "But my life is worth nothing to me unless I use it for finishing the work assigned me by the Lord." John 17:4, "I have brought you glory on earth by completing the work you have for me to do." You know, it's so easy for us to do this kind of work, at least for me. It's so easy to be in ministry, even though it's so stressful and so hard at times to deal with people walking in and out of church, to meet friends and befriend them and invite them into my homes and let them play with my daughters and become brothers and sisters to them, and then to watch them not want it and then just break my heart or stab my back or, you know, look at my little girls, be like, where's so-and-so, they're not around anymore. That kills me to think that that's the life that I'm exposing my kids to. That I'm inviting worldly people into my house with the full expectation that they may not want this with their life. That's some dangerous work. It's hard work. And it's easy to complain about. But what motivates me is not necessarily that, but also what it's doing for my family. Because that work is the work that God called me to do. And my motivation to do those kind of things is to see what God has blessed me with. Because if it wasn't for me doing some of that stuff, I may not even have a wife. My whole family's been divorced besides my brother. I have three sisters and a brother and a mom, and there's probably 6 divorces between just my immediate family. I may not have girls that love me and respect me, you know? I may not have a job. I may not have these things that I have. God's blessed me with so much. And so since I can concentrate and remember on what I'm fighting for and the purpose in my life, it makes it so much easier to go out and just do the work. And I think sometimes when we look at our lives, we can look at the same things. Remember what you're fighting for. It's for your families. It's for your future. It's for your kids' futures. That's what a relationship with God is all about. It's fighting for the next generation. You know? Maybe you don't like what's going on in politics. Maybe you don't like what's going on with the presidency. Maybe you don't like what's going on over in Iran. Like, maybe you don't like a lot of stuff that's going on. Well, then start focusing on your purpose. And start focusing on your family. And start focusing on the next generation. And start fighting for those things by doing the work today, so that those things can change, and so that those things will change. And that's exactly what Nehemiah had his people do, is focus on remembering why they were doing what they were doing. And then it says in Nehemiah 6:15, "So on October 2nd, the wall was finished, just 52 days after they began." This giant wall that they had all these complaints about once they first got there, and they realized that there's so much rubble around, right? And that they're not capable, and they're so exhausted. 52 days to be reminded of purpose, to have the encouragement of one another, to start going to the Lord with these kind of things. It was built. And that's the coolest thing about a relationship with God, is that it doesn't matter where you're at. It doesn't matter who you have in your life. It doesn't matter what the hiccup is. It doesn't matter what the wall that's been torn down in your life is. God can rebuild it. And he can use his people. and he can use us as well. I want to end on this cool story that I found. It says in 1952, Florence Chadwick stepped into the waters of the Pacific Ocean off Catalina Island, determined to swim to the shore of mainland California. She had already been the first woman to swim the English Channel in both ways. The weather was foggy and chilly. She could hardly see the boats accompanying her. Still, she swam for 15 hours. When she begged to be taken out of the water along the way, her mother, in a boat alongside, told her she was close and that she could make it. But finally, physically and emotionally exhausted, she stopped swimming and was pulled out of the water. It wasn't until she was on the boat that she discovered the shore was less than a half a mile away. And she talked in an interview afterwards, and she goes, I don't want to discredit myself, but I think if I could have saw the shore, I probably wouldn't have been able to make it. And, you know, in a relationship with God, sometimes fogs can happen in our lives. And sometimes it can be hard to see that shore. And becoming like Christ and bringing Christ into your life, more times than not, is starting to remove those fogs and starting to see clearly the purpose that God has set out for you so you can get the work done. And whenever you can start to see things clearly, see things in the light that God wants you to see them in, then you can start finishing things. It said, 2 months later, I'm trying to position myself. It says 2 months later, after her failed attempt, Florence Chadwick decided to get back in the water on a clear sunny day and finish in record time from shore to shore. See, it's cool to see what we can do when we have our minds right, when we can see clearly and see straight. And if you're visiting with us today, I want you to know that God is here to intervene, and God wants you to He wants to set you back on the right track. He wants to set things straight and let you start seeing clear. He wants you to see what your life could be, not what it is. And I'm going to encourage everybody to pull out this communication card. If you guys look at your guys' bulletins, there's this cardstock piece of paper. It's a communication card. And this is our opportunity for you guys to start seeing things clearly, seeing things clearly in your life. Like I said, I don't know what it is for you. I don't know if it's an addiction. I don't know if it's a marriage. I don't know if it's parenting, if it's a divorce, you know, abuse. I'm not sure what it's been in your life or what is in your life that's causing a fog. But God wants to provide some sunlight. He wants to provide a clear vision of what he can do and what he can bless you with in your life. And these principles are always great for you, and this is your opportunity to start, you know, tapping into them, specifically the connecting with others. And so what we're going to do here in a minute is I'm going to say a prayer. I'm going to give you guys some opportunity to fill out this card. And we really do hope that you guys will, you know, take an opportunity to investigate and see what God really does want to do with your life. He's transformed my life in so many ways, and so many members in this church he's transformed as well. And with a new year, I know we always set new resolutions and new different things that we want to try and fix, but maybe we need to start looking at the one thing that we need to fix, our heart and our relationship with God, and see what can be produced through that. And so I'm going to say a prayer. The worship's going to come up. They're going to sing a song. You've got some time to fill out that communication card, and then we'll sing another song to pass those baskets. You know, for our members, that's your contribution to our church and our ministries. But, you know, if you're visiting with us today, we don't expect anything from you guys. All we want to do is we don't want to get your money. We just want to give you guys a clear vision of what God can do in your life. So I'm going to say a prayer, and then the worship team will come up. God, I just want to thank you so much for just New Year's. You know, it's cool to have, you know, a calendar, you know, 12-month calendar to look at. You know, there's just different seasons that there's different things we do. And, you know, football season is kind of in right now. And then summer hits and we have all the different sports seasons that we do. And, you know, wintertime and the holidays. And we're kind of coming just out of all that holiday season. And it's kind of cool. This is kind of reevaluate where we're at the new year. And so, God, I want to thank you for opportunities for different seasons that we have. And the season that we're in now is usually known for seasons of fresh starts. And so, God, I pray with this new season that we have, that we can really look at the life that we have and look at the start that we want to have, and not necessarily look at the selfish side of the starting of what we want in our own personal life, but, God, we can start looking at the start of continuing to do the work that you've set out for us to do and figuring out how we can get on board with that and start seeing the blessings that you'll provide because of that. So thank you again for today, and bless the banquet that we're going to have tonight. It's going to be a great experience, and I'm so encouraged and loved by all the people that we have here at this church, Lord. So in your son's name I pray. Amen.